Howdy, folks. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, Katie and I get to do one of our favorite types of episodes, and that is looking at your questions and answering some of them. We love discussing these. Not only do we do podcast episodes on them sometimes, we just talk about them in our home. And so if you've got questions or if you've got comments, you know, things you're working through in your marriage, in your home, you can check the link below. We'd love to hear about those things.
All right. So starting off, this woman asked, what are your thoughts on having children in your upper 30s and 40s? Is it selfish as the children won't get as much time with their parents? And there's also an increased risk of things like Down syndrome, et cetera. What are your thoughts, Elisha?
So I'm assuming they don't get as much time with their parents because of their parents will die sooner. Is that what they're talking about?
Like, or potential years with their parents, okay, probably. Years.
It's not like their parents have less time when they're kids, maybe.
Yeah, I would assume it's just death that is the concern.
Yeah, because it's funny because some of the people that we know that have had kids later in life seem to get more time with their young children because of their schedules at that point. So I don't think that's what they're talking about. If it is, I don't think it's true. I think you get more time with your kids when they're young. I just think children are such a blessing always. And siblings for each other are a blessing, right? Siblings for each other. Like when you're able to have more than one child, if the Lord blesses you with that, it's a gift to that child that you have as well. It's a gift to have siblings, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, with things like high risk, it is interesting because, living is risky. Like children are risky. It's risky just to do the most meaningful things in life. And again, I'm no doctor, in case, you know, folks were wondering. So this isn't like medical advice, but I think it's pretty well understood that the current medical system does not endorse children, right? It's not set up to economically it's the opposite. And you could say that that's just business that makes those decisions. You could say it's a more insidious worldview that discourages people from having children. But you have to take that into account, I think, when you are reading online, you know, or when medical advice, or when you're getting actual medical advice from professional, there is like an agenda sometimes, whether or not I think the person giving the advice knows, but like they're working in a system that is against, children.
Yeah. And medical advice is so fear-based. If we were to go, really everything surrounding children is fear-based. It's like, they're going to cost you X amount of dollars over their lifespan. And the truth is, when you're opening up your heart to children, you're opening up your heart to a lot of love and a lot of pain. I mean, you're becoming very vulnerable to someone and something that is going to be very out of your control and in God's hands. And so you could lose a child at any point in life. They're just going to be growing on their own. As much as we pour into them, there's going to be probably a lot of difficulties in navigating parenting, regardless of what God has in store for us. So I do think when it comes to health, I think it's something we can really over-idolize here in our culture. While I'm a huge fan of pouring into your health and being wise in terms of eating well and stewarding your body and things like that, I don't think it's something to scoff at. Like, I don't think gluttony is something to scoff at, or eating nutritiously is something to scoff at. I do think there's an element of trust when it comes to children, and that's what the Lord requires of us in every step of the child bearing process, whether we're 30, whether we're 40, whether he gives us a healthy baby, whether he gives us a baby with more complications, that child is only going to be brought into this world for his purposes and for his glory. And really, we're just the carriers.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't feel like it's ours to decide. What's funny is it's, so much of it is outside of our control. Again, yeah, I mean, we can't force a healthy pregnancy at 22. So even though statistically you've got a good chance, there's people that don't have healthy pregnancies, you know?
Yeah. And I do think, you know, regardless of, you know, the advice you get, regardless of like what your current take is on what's too high of risk, what's a reasonable amount of risk. I think that you being in lockstep with your spouse and then realizing like like natural family planning is always an option here. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's not like, we aren't the, like have every single possible pregnancy that we could ever have family. Right. Mm-hmm. I know it might seem like it because we've got seven children, you know, we're pregnant with our seventh after 10 years of marriage. We do think every child is a blessing, but we also think that there's totally room in times where, because of the health of the mother, because of maybe the health of your youngest child that requires extra care, mm-hmm. you know, because of circumstantial things, implementing, doing what is in within your control to have spacing, I really think is appropriate, right? And it can be a wise thing. And yeah, and then again, you don't have to have any permanent procedures done. You don't, you know, nothing like that. But being like, hey, we're not in a place now where we feel like we can do this. Then yeah, you can implement natural family planning.
And again, I think natural family planning, the beautiful thing about it is that you remain open to life. And I think that's what God requires from us, is that remaining open to life. And if he desires to send us a child, he will. Mm-hmm. But working within his cycles and rhythms and methods, can be a beautiful process. But also, I would just let you know that when you grow up in around families that have many children, like Elisha's family, my family, one of our friends right now, some of our families are down at their house and they're pregnant with their, 12th or 13th? 13th, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually very, very common, especially if you have been having healthy pregnancies, to continue having healthy pregnancies. Mm. It's interesting when you look at those risk analysis features, it might be a woman just, I don't know exactly what the statistics are, but there are certain demographics that are going to be a lot more prone to having a child with more disabilities or more needs, which is not to say, though, that that's not exactly what God has and the joy that he has for a family, even though it's going to be more difficult. Because there's beauty in that, too. But, you know, my mother had her last at 46, you know, 11 children. None of us had any extra needs. Some of us were required a lot of attention, like same with your mother. And we just know a lot of, or she was in her 40s, mm-hmm. having 10 children. And I just think there's a lot of fear mongering out there. And there's, when we look at God's design and we see the woman's fertility cycle going into her 40s, then there is genetically, you can sustain that, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. on average, a woman that is, if her fertile years are continuing going, then the Lord can continue bringing children into the world through that woman.
Yeah. Especially when you are in a marriage, like a Christian marriage, yes. that like, that's where you're bringing this child into. Okay. This isn't like what we talked about with Katie Faustin, right? This isn't, you know, artificially manufactured, you know, pregnancy or whatever you want to call it, you know, something like IVF, where there's all sort, like you really are, that would be being selfish. Like you just mm-hmm. want this accessory to your life. Mm-hmm. That's not the fruit of a Christian marriage. I think that your heart, you can rest assured that like, hey, if you're in a Christian marriage, this was designed for Christian marriages. Like this is the way God made marriages to be, is that children would come from Christian marriages. And so there's a lot of rest in that as well.
Yes.
Regardless of the needs of the child, you know, like how much time you're going to be around with those children. Will you die, you know, when they're still, you know, young or something? It's like, this is just a byproduct of marriage.
Yes. And so if the Lord allowed you to get pregnant at 41 years old, he will sustain that child just fine if you end up passing away early, as much as I'm sure they would love to have you around longer. Again, I think outside of our modern world, these didn't really used to be considerations because the mortality rate was so high for children and for parents. We weren't really mentally guaranteeing ourselves a long life either way. Are you eating an apple on the podcast?
I can't believe I just did that.
Wow. Let me just reach over here and eat the crunchiest snack. I was like,
I'll do this really subtly. I'm sorry. I'll never do that again.
Oh man, Elisha's getting hungry over here. We gotta keep moving. I think the devil likes to use that word selfish and twist it in well-meaning parents. And also you are going to get people that tell you it's selfish. And what's interesting to continue having children, and what's interesting is they don't have to have a biblical worldview to tell you that. And I think that is kind of the first warning flag. I remember when we had two kiddos who were 13 months apart, I was pregnant with our next. And at the time I was filming cleaning videos on YouTube, and I had a lot of comments saying, that is so selfish. She needs to care for the kids she has. And Elisha mentioned in a recent episode that we just came back from a business conference. And while we were there, our minds were blown as to what is possible in terms of like just the limiting beliefs we had for how much time and energy and money you can invest in a business and how quickly it can grow. And I think that we have those with family too. We think, well, that woman has X amount of energy and X amount of time, and so therefore the kids are going to be neglected, clearly, where there's just a next level that we can go to. And I think that Elisha and I really discovered that right before the Lord blessed us with the seventh pregnancy. I was using those same arguments here on the podcast. I was saying I felt like it was going to be selfish to have more children because I didn't really know the six that I had very well. But what I realized was it wasn't the six kids. That wasn't the reason why I didn't know the children very well. It's because I was putting my time and energy into other things that were selfish instead of pouring into them. And it's crazy how fast we were able to kick into that next level. And it's not saying that we can be all things to our children. We want to always be reconsidering this, like who's falling through the cracks? Who are we overlooking? Who needs more from us? But it is crazy how close I feel with each one of our children right now. And I feel like I know each one of them so individually. And it was a very limiting belief in my mind that, well, this is as much time and energy as I have, so I cannot get to know them any better.
Wow.
We cannot add more to this equation.
Yes.
So God just, he can continue to grow us. Well, I do think, I second what Elisha says. I think that there's a lot of wisdom in natural family planning. I think that God has kind of this built-in desire to not do that too often because it is a very difficult process for the marriage. It's not fun. And so if you're starting that at 35 and you're going to 45, that's going to be a very long time of staying on that that method. You know, so I think that there's just built-in desire placed there for us so that we continue to potentially procreate during those years.
Right. Yeah. All right, guys, we need to jump in here and let you know that out of necessity, we are raising the prices over at Voberg Music Academy. And you say, out of necessity, I don't buy it. And it actually has shifted. Okay, we were able to keep our prices very low for a long time because we weren't offering live instruction, right? And we've added so many live calls. We're needing to add to the team. Okay. Not only has the customer service load increased greatly, the teacher load has increased greatly. We're creating more courses than ever. We're doing more live calls than ever. We're sending out more badges in the mail than ever before. We're also sending out more $10 bill awards for the Six Songs of Summer than ever before. That might be the number one reason we're raising prices.
No, it's not
the number one reason.
It really is. We want to continue. We've talked about scaling back what we're offering on Voberg Music Academy because there's nothing like it. We've never seen any method where you can learn as easily, as affordably, and as fun as you can at Voberg Music Academy. We're very confident in that. We don't want to change anything that we're doing. And so we just need to bring more people on to keep giving you an excellent product. And so this is going to still be the most affordable way that you and your family can learn music. But we want to keep families learning together. We didn't want to start saying, okay, every child has to have their own account. We want to continue offering an exceptional product to you guys. And as a result of that, we are going to have to increase our prices, but it's still going to be very affordable.
It is. And if you sign up before we raise prices this fall, you can lock in that price. And once you are signed up in that course, we won't like raise prices once you're already in at that price. So yeah, there is kind of a timeline. We wanted to give you a chance to get in under the current price and enjoy those lessons. This also is kind of like, I mean, this we could probably do, this is kind of a job listing too, actually. If
Okay, we're doing that.
Sure, why not? Because we're really moving really fast. We are. This is a job listing. Okay, so reach out if you guys. Well, no, we'll do the job listing separate. Okay, but a job listing is coming because then we'll lay out what we're looking for in the job listing. Okay,
okay,
so stay tuned if that's something that's interesting to you. Okay, I've got a question here. Okay, since living in the country, have you guys considered moving back to a city where there could be more liberal agendas and negative influences on your children?
Yeah, it's funny. We've gone to a lot of cities this year. And I say a lot. We went to New York for the first time. Loved it. We went to the Seattle recently.
The Seattle? Did you say the Seattle?
Did I?
I don't know. We did also go to the Seattle.
Where else did we go? We went to Las Vegas. Did not love it. That isn't a city we'd consider moving to.
Sure, to Nashville.
We went to Nashville.
Yeah.
Brought our baby to Nashville. So in the last year, we've gone to some pretty solid cities. And every time we've gone, we've been like, it'd be fun to move to a city.
Yeah. It is. I do think that there's just been a change in the air probably since, I don't know if it's the like the MAGA wave that came through in the 2024 election is part of it, or if just like 2020 brought about, like 2020 was so extreme. I do wonder if like there is an element of like liberals are reassessing their strategy, you know, where they're kind of like, okay, that was a little aggressive, you know, like let's ease up a bit because, or so I think all those things could be contributing to, you know, like cities just seemed so hostile in 2020 and 2021 to Christians and to children. And so I don't know if that was my perspective or if that was that what was actually happening. But it is interesting going, like you said, New York, Nashville, Seattle. I guess you're right. And then Las Vegas. And really feeling like with the current situation in those cities, again, we wouldn't choose Las Vegas ever, you know?
No, it's so dirty.
Yeah. But the other cities, you're like, oh man, like there's, of course you could thrive as a family here. That's just kind of what it seems like, you know, kind of like speaking to what you talked about in the last episode about like the trad wife, like Christian women, you know, have just been able to be Christian women mm-hmm. under any circumstances, you know, mm-hmm. in the history of the world. And So I don't know if we've changed or if the cities have changed, I guess is what I'm saying, but we could totally see ourselves living in a city with our children.
Yeah. I think that we like a lot of the opportunities provided there, walking around, all that, even diversity or running into people that don't think like you. We love that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a wonderful learning opportunity, teaching opportunity. Someone that our brother just got married to our wonderful sister-in-law who grew up her whole life in Seattle in a family of 10 kids. And we actually interview Molly and Eric Lilia, her parents. They're two of my heroes. I look up to them very much here on the podcast. And they speak to raising 10 Christian godly kids in Seattle, which is kind of a crazy city. Like it's a city that's known for their, what would you say? Like
liberalism, probably.
Well, liberalism, but specifically there's a lot of gay marriage and queer behavior mm-hmm. there.
It's like celebrated.
Yes. Yeah. It's very celebrated. And so to raise their kid, like when you talk to their children, they're just so solid and incredible. And I think it's had a different effect than what most people would think is we're going to move into this city and then our kids are just going to be swept away by the world. I think they're able to see very firsthand the debauchery of the world and not want any part in it. Yeah. So I do really prefer a place like New York where the identity is not a sexual identity. Like the identity of the city.
Oh, like is not Las a sexual Vegas identity. Or San Francisco or.
Well, like Las Vegas, I feel like is a very like straight, but sexual identity.
Just Sin City.
It's just dirty that way. Whereas Seattle, identity politics are very huge there.
Right.
And I would say New York has more of a like immigrant vibe to it, with like this melting pot identity where it's like, we all came here and we're all going to find a way to make it work.
Man, you sound like an expert on New York, Katie. Like...
This is from my 4 days in New York. This is how I felt. Okay. All those who are living in New York could tell me what it's actually like, but I'm saying in terms of bumping into the people on the streets, who I'm talking to.
We did actually walk around these. I mean, we walk a lot in general, but we walked a ton in all the places that we just mentioned when we were in Nashville, New York, Seattle, and then we didn't walk as much in Las Vegas.
We didn't walk the strip. Yes.
And we were in like the city centers of all those places
Manhattan,
that's where we were staying. Mm-hmm. But I do think that like when it comes to, I want to protect our children. And like, I think our mindset has changed since 2020, you know, like when we fled, we did feel like we were fleeing Washington State, and we really thought it was the end. Like we were fleeing to like try to enjoy as much life as was left, knowing that it was all coming to an end, you know? And then we started listening at that point to like more post-millennial thinkers, and we're like, okay, we've got to build here. And really, I think it's less of their influence now in our lives.
All millennialism has been like the next
wave,
regardless of what happens in this world, the Lord's going to build his church. So we're going to be a part of that.
Exactly.
Regardless of like whether America goes to hell in a handbasket or not, or our state does or not, we're going to really focus on building the church specifically over like politics or maybe something that a post-millennialist would focus more on.
Yeah. And I would say something that in my heart that's changed over the last couple of months is just I don't have this disdain for non-Christians, liberal non-Christians like I had before. I think that my heart I was just disgusted with the person, not like even just the sin. Like I was like people that were, you know, whether it was people that were activists for, you know, transgenderism or, you know, the gay rights activists or people that were just like pro-choice activists. Mm-hmm. It's like, I really, in retrospect, hated the person and had no love for the person at all. And that's just not what we're called to do as Christians. Like,
or even like the poor, like feeling more like,
exactly.
Well, we don't want to be around homeless. They kind of like deserve what they're getting in terms of like, oh, they've made poor decisions or, you know, they aren't working heartily or, you know, all these things that you put on people where that's been beautiful to see. Like the Lord's just really changed your heart and made it. And I feel like you've really grown me in this area and just seeing like, they're a person, they're a soul. They need love. Maybe all those things are true about them. And at the end of the day, they just need God.
Yeah. And that would have sounded so like, I hated when people talked that way, like back in 2020, you're just like weak, you know, like we need to own the libs. And, that's just not how I think now. And it's come from just reading the Gospels again. And it's like God knew that the people that are homeless or that are addicted to drugs or that are confused on their ideology, like he knew that like decisions got them to those places, right? Like he knew that it was because of like selfish, sinful, behavior that led to the person being on the street. Like, you know, and he's like, you need to love those people and have compassion. Even like, and that's just kind of ridiculous that liberals have hijacked these Christian words that should be true. And they've then used those words to title programs that are not loving, that are actually not showing compassion. Right. So it's a total lie, but like, of course,
like
Christians,
saying they care about women, but killing their babies.
Exactly.
You know,
and being like, of course we need to care about women. Of course we need to have compassion on the poor. Of course we need to like, you know, have charitable hearts, you know, have giving hearts to these people. And instead of having this, well, you're just gonna, you know, induce more of that, you know, behavior. You're just gonna, it's just kind of like, hey, like I'm not saying you don't show wisdom, but like God, he did tell us to love these people, you know? And so I think when I go to the cities now and I see the homelessness, I see the transgender people. I see, you know, gay couples. I see, it's like, yeah, do I want to protect my children? Of course. There's like the protector instincts that kick in, but my heart has a ton of, like, I would say compassion for these people. When Katie and I travel in the summer with all of our kiddos, we can't help sometimes but look at other travelers that have RVs and campers and have some level of envy towards them. We feel it, okay? I know we shouldn't, but we do, because it looks so accommodating to families, right? Your own space, a place that's air conditioned, you can get out of the heat, nap your kiddos in a pack and play. Well, we discovered Outdoorsy.com, and this is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S. They offer thousands of RVs and campers nationwide, and they're available in your neighborhood. And there's multiple ways for you to travel and to do this. Okay, you can drive it yourself, or you could tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up to wherever you're going at your destination. Okay, that's pretty convenient. Now, there's built-in peace of mind that comes with this. There's comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, roadside assistance is included in your rental. And here's the deal: there's great value, because oftentimes these are more affordable than hotels or vacation rentals. So it's your own space, and it can be more affordable as well. If you are over 21 years of age, you do have to be 21 years in order to rent these things. The way you do it is, it's just three simple steps, okay? You go to outdoorsy.com and you search and you choose an RV that fits your family and your trip, okay? And then you book with confidence. There's insurance, there's support, there's protection included. And then you hit the road, okay? Or if you're having it delivered to your location, I guess you'd still hit the road, but you would drive in your own car and then you'd arrive at your destination with an RV fully set up. Okay, those are the three steps. And this summer, they're actually running a campaign where when you use our code, which is FAMILY, they remove all service fees from your booking. And so when you go to outdoorsy.com, that's outdoorsy.com, and you use our code FAMILY at checkout, then you don't have to pay the service fees. They remove them. Okay. And in for instances like this, less fees are better. So this summer, if you're going to 250th anniversary celebrations, if you're going to down Route 66 to celebrate its 100th year anniversary, if you're going to fiddle contests, family camps, whatever it is, Christian conferences, go to outdoorsy.com and utilize their great services. You know, I'm not just looking at them disgusted, you know, and being like, well, they're going to get what they deserve. They're going to be suffering in hell. I'm sounding extreme. Like, that's how I walk around thinking about people. But that was kind of how I think I was, honestly.
It was kind of just wanting to protect ourselves and our family. Because you mentioned, you know, you want to protect your kids. But it's not like someone who's has a different, is confused on their sexuality is necessarily going to jump out and stab your child with a knife. But I feel like there is an element of, like, I don't know exactly what we're protecting them from to keep them back from necessarily seeing hurting people either. I do think our kids have hearts of compassion naturally towards people. Sometimes they have hearts of fear when they see someone who's different than themselves or looks very hardened. And it's a beautiful opportunity to be like, they don't have Jesus.
In fact, it's convicting to talk about Seattle. Okay. So, like, we were on the sidewalk and we were walking in the university district at this point, like around the University of Washington, and like a man dressed as a woman, like in some process of transit, you know, some process of having some like work done to transition, walks past us, and all the kids are like, what was that? You know? Cause it's like, this man, you know, 6'4", clearly like masculine, wearing a dress, like the whole thing is confusing and the kids are confused. And, like, what is it? And I just told them what it was. It was like, yeah, like some people are really, you know, confused. They don't love God. They haven't, like, they're not Christians and they don't know if they're a man or they want to be a different gender than what God made them to be. And the kids' response to that is like, so much like what the Christian response would be. They're like, that's sad. Like, should we tell them about Jesus? I'm like, yeah, it's like really just black and white to, I think, the kids, where it's like they're lost in sin. And it's our jobs as Christians to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, well, man, now they're going to be confused their whole life because they saw a transgender person. That's not what it was at all.
No, and they know that's confusing.
Yeah,
it doesn't confuse them that person's confused. I think that too, I think we had this heart for, there's so many wonderful, godly, beautiful families that are out on farms and out on properties, and we love to be here, right? I'm saying that because when we go into a city, you feel the innocence of the kids just like exuding. I feel like you feel the joy and the rarity of a couple that loves each other. Exuding. It's like when we're walking down the street, people are like, wow, there's a baby. Like they haven't seen a baby in a long time.
Yes.
They haven't seen a couple that loves each other with a baby, yes, with other children and enjoying their children in a really long time. And it's crazy to see people's eyes light up and their smiles at just family, because it's like this flower growing through the crack in the concrete. And so it's not like, like right now, we do selfishly really love our lifestyle. And we do feel too like it's definitely the easiest way to raise all our boys and all our kids. It's very protected. It's very wonderful. We're so thankful for it. But there are these elements where we don't want to hide from the cities. We want to take our family to the cities, mm-hmm, actually, and make it a pursuit of something that we do. Because people need to see that God's love and what he can do when he changes people's hearts.
Yeah. I think a lot of this came, so I've probably talked about this too many times, but like we will get sucked into news, right? I'll start listening to the news or reading the news. And every time I do that, it's usually from, I mean, we all like listen to NPR, so that's liberal, or sometimes I'll see it from a liberal perspective, but for the most part, it's from like a very politically conservative, like at the Republican perspective. Right. And there is just so much disdain in the rhetoric of political pundits towards liberal people. I'll just adopt that attitude. And I'll be like, yeah, Seattle's the worst. Everybody in Seattle's the worst. Yeah, New York's the worst. It's the worst. LA's the worst. And so I had stopped listening to that. And then when I told people I was going, they're like, oh, poor you. You know, I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, like, well, don't you know, like the mayor and this? I was like, oh yeah. Like, I don't agree with any of those things. And you go there and I had a great time. And there is just such an attitude of disdain for like places. And it's not even the sin. Like, I guess I do think it's worth, like when we were in Honolulu a few years back, they were doing a Pride weekend, and it, to see that sin on display was appalling. Mm-hmm. And it was actually nauseating, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're like, I'm getting, because of how, and I would of course keep my kids away from that. And we, yes, would keep ourselves, yes, away from that. We're like, we want to be away from the festivities. We're
taking our kids to drag shows.
Yes, exactly. To like
where sin is on display.
Yes. Yeah. But like where those events happen, there's also times where those, in those places, there's also times where those events aren't happening and those, mm-hmm, people do need the gospel. And I think, as you, mm-hmm, said, Katie, they need to be exposed to, mm-hmm, a marriage, like a Christian marriage. They need to be exposed to Christian children. And I'm not saying you need to go live in that and, mm-hmm, be, but I do think there is an element that for us where we had a really selfish perspective of like, we're staying out of that altogether. And what, from our experience too, we're taking a long time on this question. People, like conservative political commentators act like everybody in these cities hate you and your family. Cause I do think a lot of the policies are,
they're anti-family,
yes, right? Yes. And so people vote that way, but then you walk around with your kids and it doesn't matter if they're like a purple haired, you know, lesbian pro-choice activist, like, humans are humans, mm-hmm, that when they see like a baby or they see kids playing together and like seeing who can jump off the highest step, you know, outside of a city building, like they, walls come down and you can have conversations with, they're not out there hating you, I guess is what I'm saying. Like we don't, yeah, go to the city and they're like, you guys, they're not looking at us and saying like, I hate you. You're the problem because you're Christian and you're having kids. It's, that's not been our experience.
No, or like the environments Elisha and I have gone into recently, where no one has kids, like no one's, most people are dating, you know, in their 40s. And it's funny when people say, oh, do you have kids? That's great. You guys have been married for a while. I say, oh, we've been pregnant with our 7th this year. Everybody is just like, we have not gotten one single negative response. Everybody is just like, Wow. Good for you guys. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing. Like they have only been positive. And we're saying like, this is Las Vegas. This is New York. This is just everywhere where we've shared, we're bringing another baby into the world. Mm-hmm. People are hungry for this. And maybe it's different than even our parents' experience. There is, there's a city, I'm not going to specifically name it, but I would say it's like kind of kid friendly. Like if you have two or three kids, that's perfect. But it's funny, I feel more disdain there with all my children than I do in some of these darker cities where they just don't see children at all.
Right.
Or very rarely.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's kind of interesting. Sometimes these kind of like more suburban towns, they're kind of like, what are you doing? You
know, I agree.
My two kids are pulling my hair out.
I remember this even in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
Like this was a while ago. This was a few years ago because I think we actually, Lucy was a baby.
Yeah.
And I remember you were working. That was funny. That was funny what we were doing there. Yeah. But you were doing the working thing. And then I was out on walking with Lucy.
I was doing like a hair commercial.
Yeah. You were doing a hair commercial. And I was walking with Lucy, and this was downtown San Francisco, and the positivity, the positive vibes from everybody there of such different beliefs because I had a baby were incredible. And it just opened up conversation, and they're so willing to talk. Anyway, so yeah, that's to answer the question, I don't think we'll ever like move to a city just because we've never lived in a city and we're not from cities and we're small town people. Yeah. But I do think it's so good for Christians to be in cities. You know, it's just when Jesus says, like, we know that you can do ministry anywhere, right? Small towns, big towns, all those things. But when you actually have that perspective of like, I'm here to be about the Lord's work, like those are talk about a plentiful harvest when you're around millions of people versus, you know, thousands of people. And of course you could do the work with thousands of people too. People need to do that work as well. And I want to be more faithful at doing it in small towns. And then I'll say another thing too. We're in like very conservative North Idaho, and in Coeur d'Alene, unfortunately, like one of the parks here totally has like a pride, event, you know,
they come over from Spokane from our more liberal.
Yeah. And so what do we do? It's like, yeah, we avoid that. Christians go down, they share the gospel, you know, and stuff like that, which is good, but we're not going to bring our kids to that. And I think that like, so what I'm saying is, yes, if you're in the city, keep your kids, I think, from like the nude parade and from the, you know, like queer activities. And like you said, the drag show, you know, drag queen shows and stuff. But I think you can live in those cities and still like be a light without having to just be living in the filth like that.
Well, and I think kids get an accurate perspective, their perspective of sin bringing death. And I think that that's something that, you know, the documentary Shiny Happy People that was out. And I think that some people we can seek to be around people that look like us and act like us. And while peer pressure is really great for our children and stuff like that, that's healthy. Sometimes we miss out on seeing that sin brings death, like the final end, because sin can still look shiny. And, so anyways, I just think, you know, when you see someone like twitching down the sidewalk and they've lost everything, it's so clear that that person does not have a lot of life. Mm-hmm. Or when you see, you know, a single person that has chosen to abort children and now they're 45 years old and they're tired of their career and they've been dating their whole life. And the kids get to compare that with our fruitful home that the Lord has blessed us with by his grace. It's just like, wow, I want this. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't just want to pursue my selfish dreams to the end where I am alone and tired and sad.
Yeah. I'm actually going to say one more thing on this, just about the influence of children.
Yeah.
I think that regardless of where you live, it's not the town you live in, the state you live in, it's not the country you live in. It's like the core, like three to five people that your kids are around the most that are going to have the influence in their life.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so I think there's people that live in very conservative Christian, like highly densely populated with Christian areas. And their kids still will get like in the wrong crowds. Right. And get led astray. And so I think it's just, you have to really pay attention to like the core influences of those close influences of your children.
yeah, not the greater sea of people that you're surrounded by.
Right, exactly.
I think the fear in COVID, too, going back to that real quick, was that we were genuinely concerned they might take our kids.
Exactly.
Or something based off a vaccination policy, based off a school policy. So we don't want to put our kids in that environment.
No.
I think that's why a lot of people were scared in California. And since then, even though they still... these, you know, West Coast cities and East Coast cities still can have the same evil laws, you don't feel like they're just going to knock on your door and take your kids away.
Yes.
That would be something that would like definitely make us move to North Idaho. Okay. Or Tennessee or wherever. Okay. I have two questions regarding younger siblings. How do you maintain a healthy relationship with younger siblings who are still under their parents' authority when you become aware that they are making decisions behind their parents' backs? For example, they may lead a double life while out with friends or on social media. Parents are often unaware of pictures, videos, hidden accounts, or other activities because these things are intentionally kept from them. All of the siblings involved are under 18 years old and still living at home. My second question is, how do you approach your parents about concerns you have that have been brought to your attention regarding your younger siblings? What's the best way to communicate what you know without damaging family relationships or creating unnecessary conflict?
Okay, so this is a sibling?
It sounds like there's some younger siblings.
Got it.
That are kind of acting out and the parents don't know.
Oh, got it. Yeah. I mean, ideally, you've got a relationship with the sibling so you can talk to them first. That's an area we've just been trying to grow in. And just if you've got concerns for somebody, it feels productive to just like talk about it with your spouse, then go talk about it with somebody else, and then talk about it with somebody else that knows them. And they're like, I know, I'm worried too. Like, you know, and it just turns into gossip and it's not beneficial. Like it feels like you're doing something helpful, but you're not. And so if there is a real concern there, I think it's, you know, you go to the person, you know, and address it. And then I do think like, if it's the case of like, where it's like, hey, this is, I know about this. Like you need to repent and I love you enough. So like, if you don't, I'm going to go tell mom and dad, you know, like, or I'm going to go tell whoever it is that they're accountable to, you know? Yeah. If it's like, you find out something like of a married person doing something, you're kind of like, hey, I know about this. Like you're going to go tell your spouse, right? You know, like, and so I think it is start with the best, what I would say,
I think that's really wise advice.
Yeah.
From my perspective, that's kind of what popped into my head too, is I've made the mistake. These sound like more extreme examples, but I think whenever you're an older sibling, you're going to realize, well, they aren't doing what I was doing when I was their age, you know?
Yeah, the standards have shifted.
Yeah, exactly. And so I made the mistake of going to my parents for stuff that just was, I should have just gone and talked to a sibling about, and it probably wouldn't have been a big deal. You know, it can lead into just being gossipy or hurt that relationship. Mm-hmm. But like Elisha said, I do think these situations are severe enough that they absolutely need accountability. And it's kind of like tough love. It might hurt them in the moment, but if they aren't going to be honest to your parents, I think you owe it to your sibling, even if there's a rift in the relationship, to just go speak to your parents about it. Because your parents have the right to know as parents, as the authority.
Yeah.
When it says, how do you go to them? I don't know. I just say, hey, I need to talk to you about something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know if there's, it's probably just going to be different depending on what your dynamic is with your parents. You know, do you already have a lot of trust? Do they respect you? Is there mutual respect there? Or, you know, are you seen as the radical one in the family already? You know,
that's like are your parents going to be more aligned with maybe the belief systems of the younger kids and they're fine with
it? Right.
You know, but I do think it can be a blessing to be found out.
Oh, you kidding me?
For your sin.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. That is such a thing of grace. That's God's grace to have your sin exposed, have it be brought to the light. Like, do it yourself, you know, because God in his goodness will bring it to the light. If you are his child, I think he will, you know.
And life is long when it comes to relationships. If your sibling is a Christian and you are a Christian, then even if there's mutual maybe pain over this, it doesn't mean that you can't continue to show them that you love them, care about them, actually want what's best for them. You only did this out of the goodness of caring for them and not just because you wanted to see them get in trouble or, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I still think it's but worth go going to, them to the first. Sibling first. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
give them the opportunity because maybe they've been feeling guilt about this or bad about it.
Yes.
And it's like they need that little push over the edge, like, hey, I know this is going on. Yes, that is. And if they maybe want backup support, be like, hey, I'll go with you if you want, you know, but yeah, make sure it comes to light, but give them the opportunity to
repent.
Do it.
Exactly. To
yes.
Honestly, because the way that like Satan works, he can really slowly sear consciences, you know, where it's really gradual, the proverbial frog in the pot. And so like your sibling could truly just need a wake up call where it's like, hey, let's actually think about what this behavior is, you know? And they're like, they like Lord willing, they could have a heart of like, oh my word. Like, yeah, it sounds like if they're actively hiding it, then they're probably...
Yeah, but again, they might just be caught in it and they need some encouragement of like, well, you're going to get found out either way. Which way would you like to do this?
Yeah.
Okay. This is kind of a quick one. It feeds into the baby thing. I'm a new mom. My baby's 5 months old now. My husband and I very much want a large family with siblings close in age. My current concern is if the Lord blesses us with another baby soon, is how this will affect the nutrition of my first baby, milk production decreasing, baby not ready for solids yet, etc. I know you all have had some pregnancies close together, and I'm curious how you've approached this. This is kind of a tag on our first question, but I feel like it's
different scenario.
Worth encouraging. But like,
What was the last part?
I don't even know what I did with it, Elisha. Yes.
Do you have an answer for it?
I think so. I think I have a quick answer for
okay,
it.
Good.
Okay, quick answer for it. I think that, again, it goes back to where's our value system. My health on our value system comes below our children and our family. And honestly, even the kids' health, I think, again, this is an area where I remember reading a Weston and Price book and they said, your kids need to be spaced 3 years apart for nutrition. And it's like, well, that could be a limiting belief because you can definitely supplement and just concentrate things so that you can get back up to speed, you know, and some women are going to have a higher nutritional value from day one than a woman who might not get nutritional value back ever after having a child. So our closest were 13 months and then we had a miscarriage at 13 months or it would have been 13 months apart for that one. Yeah, sure. And then we got pregnant a couple months later. And so we have a couple 16 month children. None of our spacing has been healthy spacing in terms
according to that,
anybody's, you know, because anytime we've had a bigger space, there's been a loss in between. So it's like my body wasn't just healing. It was going out to a baby that we didn't get to meet. So I think it's okay. It's okay if our eldest, he was breastfed for 3 months and then, or maybe 4 months. And then when his sister came into the world, I didn't really know a lot about breastfeeding or when I got pregnant with her. And I just, maybe I could have done some stuff. I don't know, but I lost my milk at 4 months. And so he went on this little like homemade goat milk formula I made and he's a healthy 9-year-old that's bright as a whip. You know, maybe he has some deficiency, but at the end of the day, I'm grateful he has his sister over. I don't even know what theoretical nutritional amount he lost, you know? So I think sometimes again, value health, prioritize that, supplement very well, take it seriously. But it's like, if the Lord blesses you and you're able to carry another baby, there's an element of health that goes along with that. That's just built in because I do think, sometimes we just lose the children that our bodies weren't ready for, which is obviously a sad thing. And you want to use wisdom in this area, but I wouldn't sweat it. In terms of the ideal health, like we are not living here. We are living here to glorify God and point blank.
Yeah.
We're living here to glorify God. And we can do that healthy and we can do that unhealthy.
Yeah.
Our children can do that healthy. Our children can do it unhealthily.
Right.
So again, stewarding whatever genetics he gave us and stewarding whatever genetics end up getting given to our children, that's within our control.
You know, I agree with everything you said. I'm backing it up to the first question about having kids and the fear of different, like disorders, I think, coming from your order, right? I don't know which ones in particular. Are there
Down syndrome? Okay. I don't know. Maybe autism increases.
So. Sure. But we, at a church we were visiting a while back, there was a Down syndrome young man serving. Aww. And like you just think, like, this is such a gift. It was just such a gift.
It was a gift to the whole church.
It was the entire church, and it was a gift to him. And I don't know. It's just whether, you know, yeah, with autism, with special needs. I grew up with a, you know, a special needs cousin who's still around, and there's just a gift in it, right? Like, there's just a gift in all those things. Yeah. So anyways,
that's, and again, like, it will require, it will be hard.
Yes.
And it will tax us and it will push us. And
he's still living with my aunt and uncle are not going to be empty nesters.
And he's ever. In his 40s, yeah, right?
Exactly. Now? Exactly. And like that is, and yet there's a gift in that, right? Mm-hmm. Too. Like he's the gift. Like, I don't know. It's just.
Yeah. I think there is an element of trusting God's timing. And again, if you feel like you need to space your kids through natural family planning while remaining open to life, there is that. God gives us that freedom to do. Mm-hmm. But then again, if he chooses to send you children very close together, as he has with us, it's only been a gift. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe I think it's hard to quantifiably measure sometimes.
Right.
And again, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like at the end of the day, we don't actually care that much. I'm not saying this specific listener doesn't care that much, but when I see the drinks moms are drinking, the food they're eating, the things we allow ourselves, the treats, the whatever, and I'm speaking to myself too, it's like, well, it's not like I care that much.
Right. It was when we had the conviction, we said we don't have enough time for all of our kids.
Yes.
Right. And then it's like, who are we fooling here? Like,
yeah,
we're spending time every which way, you know? Mm-hmm. And we could really clean things up here and actually
yes.
be a lot more God-honoring.
We can maybe compress these time frames
yes.
with nutrition. Or, yes. you know, we could be harder on ourselves if in these areas if we really care about giving our kids good nutrition.
Right.
Instead of just being like, we're just going to hope the tank refills
yeah.
by waiting a subjective amount of time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. We should wrap it up, Katie.
Yes. Okay. That's it.
Folks, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.